Colleagues, I have a question for you all here. Do you want a break for lunch now, or would you like to plow ahead for a half hour or so? The Elizabeth River Project has a briefing for us here. They're here and present. Take a half hour or 35, maybe 40 minutes if you have lots of questions. Would you like to move them up in the agenda, and we'll hear from them and then go to lunch?
Are you going to take any public comments?
Yeah, I'll take public comments here. Well, I'll take public comments now and then again after lunch. So, can you hold off on lunch for a half hour, 40 minutes? Mm-hmm. All right, that's what we'll do here. Public comment period. Is there anybody in the audience who wishes to be heard on a matter that's not on the agenda? Okay, I will reopen the public comment period after lunch. In the meantime, here, the Elizabeth River Project is with us today. Welcome, Marjorie. Welcome, Joe. Welcome, everyone. Come and edify us on your work. Hey, Dave?
Yes.
Not you, Dave. Other Dave. Dave, could you help with a technical issue here? That's all right.
Thanks for having us.
Please identify yourselves for the board.
Marjorie Mayfield Jackson. I'm the executive director of the Elizabeth River Project, and I'm here representing both the Elizabeth River Project and our sister nonprofit, the Living River Restoration Trust. And Mr. Buell was a former board member of Elizabeth River Project.
That was a number of years ago. Yes, it's good to see you again as well.
Cool.
And Dave?
Dave Kutsky, who does a lot of our construction projects on the Bowser River.
Yep.
And Joe Rieger is our deputy director for restoration. So he oversees a lot of our restoration projects. So I'm going to start off here, and then Joe and I are going to tag team.
Oh, just give them to me. I'll pass.
So you guys oversee the bottom of the Elizabeth River, and we're excited about a pioneer effort we've had underway for a little while. The chance to move to the next level of mitigation. Wetland mitigation used to be the new thing, but we think mitigating for impacts to the bottom of the river is the next pioneer effort that the country should be looking at, and we have a project that is paving the way, so to speak. So I love this picture because it doesn't look like the bottom of the river. It's through clear water in the Lafayette. It's so clear it doesn't look like you can even see the water. And this is huge progress. This is in the Lafayette after we've been working there for a number of years. So you can see the bottom clearly now. It's huge progress. So we're really talking about the Norfolk Harbor River, the Elizabeth, and its northern branch is the Lafayette. So it's through Norfolk, Portsmouth, Virginia Beach, Chesapeake. A lot of intense uses for 400 years as a major port. And so we really had our work cut out for us. We started around a kitchen table in 1991. I was one of the four, and the situation was people told us the Elizabeth River, that river's dead. There's nothing you can do about it. This is a fish that was caught from the Elizabeth River. They put it in a tank with bottom sediments from the Elizabeth River. Within 24 hours, it developed lesions and was dead. So people had kind of given up. But as citizens, we thought, do we really want a community that just accepts a dead river? Let's see if we can be the people who bring about change and bring about caring about the river. We decided that the model would be collaboration because of all the diverse interests. World's largest naval facility, world's largest coal exporting facility, 20 shipyard facilities, watermen, recreational boaters. So we really had to pull everybody together, and we've become an international model for working that way. We are proud to count 120 RiverStar businesses who do their part, 4,000 plus RiverStar homes who sign a commitment and do projects in their yard, 160 RiverStar schools. And out of all this, we have been able to bring the Elizabeth River from almost dead to a sea overall in the last scientific report card by area scientists. But we have still a big problem of contamination in the bottom of the river, which is your purview. And that's why we're really here today, to bring you up to date on a pretty important pioneer effort in that area. We would like to offer you the opportunity to do more to offset impacts to your state-owned river bottom by supporting the Living River Restoration Trust, which is the first in the country mitigation effort that offsets impacts to the bottom habitat by cleaning up other contaminated areas. So you, it's in-kind mitigation. Where you have impacts to the bottom community, you set aside funds to clean up another area that's contaminated. And we have some great success stories to tell you about. Why is this important to us? We have seven different actions that were set by a community team for what needs to happen on the Elizabeth River. And the top priority has always been clean up the bottom contamination. The goo must go, is what we say to the public. Some other efforts, we've been working with CBF, thank you, Christy, to bring back the oysters in the wetlands. The oysters in the Lafayette are now closer to fully restored oyster populations than for any other river in Virginia.
Wonderful.
We could come back and do another presentation about that. It would be very exciting. RiverStar businesses voluntarily have reduced pollution by 334 million pounds working with us since we started that program. We have a learning barge that we consider America's greenest vessel, and it stays booked to capacity for kids doing student field trips to learn about their home river. But the bottom of the river, cleaning up that contamination, was always the most difficult, most expensive thing to get to. Our goal is to clean up the contamination to non-toxic levels in all the known hot spots in the Elizabeth River. And they're mostly in the southern branch, with one in the eastern branch that we know of. Why does that matter so much to us? As you guys know, that should be the foundation of the food chain. The stuff that lives along the bottom has to feed the bigger stuff that our fishermen like to catch. And this is what the too much of the bottom of the Elizabeth looks like. It's contaminated with this tar, PAH, is correlated with high rates of cancer in fish. And there are whole stretches of the Elizabeth River bottom that are pretty much devoid of life because of this. We've begun to clean them up, though. So the tool that we've been using is the Living River Restoration Trust as an in-lieu fee mitigation fund. It's the first one in the country established by the Corps of Engineers with the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality to offset impacts to the river bottom by cleaning up other areas of river bottom. Governor Warner announced it in 2004 and said it would be important to the river's recovery. We feel like all the other things that we do for the river, unless you get the contamination out of the bottom, you just don't have a healthy system. How it works? The trust has an independent board of trustees that oversees the work. Currently, they contract with the Elizabeth River Project for staff, for economies of scale. Their expenditures have to be approved by the Corps of Engineers and the EQ. And we're currently updating those instruments because of new federal regulations. And we're going to tell you about the updates to make this process more affordable and scalable, which makes it more accessible for more mitigation projects. Two big impacts to the river bottom have benefited from this in-lieu fee fund so far. One was APM Terminals when that project came to town, and we're going to talk about the success of that effort. And the other is the Craney Island eastward expansion, and that mitigation plan, very large mitigation plan, included 67 acres of sediment cleanup as mitigation for those impacts. There's that map. So the concept was to clean up all the major hot spots in the Elizabeth River sediments to offset where they're filling 580 acres of river, healthy river bottom at the mouth of the Elizabeth. That hasn't been funded, obviously, the Craney Island expansion fully funded yet, but it's still in the mitigation plan. So Joe Rieger is going to talk about how we did this with APM Terminals when they were having the impacts here by cleaning up contamination at Money Point, that when we got started with the Elizabeth River Project, we'd go down the boat in the Southern Branch, you could smell the PAHs, you could see the sheen, and the scientists said, ah, that'll never be cleaned up. Well, we did it through this program.
Good to see you, Joe.
Good to see you. How are you?
Good.
Good. So just like wetlands mitigation, this functions the same way. If there's a loss, then you mitigate it within the watershed. And so here with APM terminals, which you also granted a permit for, there was a significant loss of healthy subaqueous bottom. And so to offset that, the Corps of Engineers required them to place money into the in lieu fee trust fund, which was then used down at Money Point to offset those significant impacts in the main stem of the Elizabeth River. Those impacts included 189 acres of subaqueous dredging, which resulted in about 10.3 million cubic yards of material being taken to Craney Island. Mostly shallow bottom areas, but those areas are very productive, and as a result, there was a fairly significant impact to the river that showed some of the highest benthic scores, bottom scores, anywhere in the Elizabeth River system. So where we mitigated for was here at Money Point, which is the former site for the Eppinger and Russell facility, which was a creosoting operation in the Southern Branch, operated from about 1800 to 1979. There's about 25 acres of contamination on the bottom that ranges from about 8,000 to 10,000 parts per million, which you want it below 45. So significant impacts to the bottom of the river. This is an aerial photo taken by the Virginia Pilot back in 1967 when the facility caught on fire and approximately almost 100,000 gallons of material made it onto the land and eventually went into the ground, which now Hess Corporation is working to clean up.
Was there 25 acres or there is now?
No, in the river itself, there was 25 acres. After we've cleaned it up, there's less. There's probably about 15 to 13 left, which will be offset with the Craney Island eastward expansion. That's part of the mitigation. I'll go into that here in just a second. So the plan, what we actually did and what you have in front of you is the booklet. So we didn't just come up with a plan to clean up the river. We came up with a community plan. And this is mostly industry, so it's mostly industrial sites. So we work with industrial partners and also the adjacent neighborhood to make sure that they were going to be on board to do this. So we got stakeholder buy-in and also came up with a suite of other projects to complement this. So you can see there were stormwater improvements. There was oyster restoration proposed. There was sediment cleanup. So it wasn't just, hey, let's clean up the site and walk away. It was more of a holistic approach with the community, both the industrial community and the residents. The upland owner, Hess Corporation, they were not the responsible party for this site. The creosote facility went out of business in about 1979. They bought the property, and as a result, they entered it into the Virginia DEQ's volunteer remediation program where they've been working to clean up the upland. But there was no requirement to clean up the offshore, which is underneath your guys' purview. So this site, which was state-owned bottom, highly contaminated, was sitting there. And so we said, is there a better way to address this contamination? So what we did is we worked with the community and hired a design engineer to basically come up with a cleanup plan that made sense for the industrial facilities and the community and what was best for the river. If you look on the left, you can see the contamination concentrations, which were over 3,000 parts per million. Remember, you want it to be under 45, which is the green area. So we had no green in this area of the river. And we have pure product, meaning floatable product of creosote in the bottom of your river. So on the right-hand side is the design they came up with. So at the bottom, phase one was a dredging tidal wetlands marsh and also oyster cap to be put in place. Phase two was just straight dredging, and those two have been completed. They were both completed prior to 2011, around 2011. And then phase three, which is part of the Craney Island eastward expansion project, that we have finished design on that, and as you can see, it's significantly higher dredging, about 55,000 cubic yards with a cap, sand cap put in place, and an engineered cap. So going through that, just so you can visually see what we did to restore this area. In 2009, we moved forward to dredging about 1,000 cubic yards. Bob Grab, actually one of the reasons why we wanted to dredge this out is it was under his recommendation to remove this hot spot out of phase one. So we dredged this area here, and really, this was one of the first sediment cleanup projects in Virginia, that actually on subaqueous land. And so we went in, you can see we had a boom system in place, and oil broom in place too. And then after we were done with the dredging, we came in and we worked with Bob. We took a little bit of time, but we were able to impede into the subaqueous area to build this cap, because we didn't want to dredge it all up. We knew it would have greater impact if we went in there to dredge all this material up.
Hey Joe, let me interrupt here. For everyone's education, Bob Grab was the Habitat Management Division Chief here at VMRC for many, many years, and when he retired, Tony Watkinson was elevated. This is a long legacy of VMRC's partnership with the great work that you all have done here to make this happen.
Right. So. I'm sorry, I apologize.
Not everyone remembers Bob.
And actually, this was pretty unique for the state, because what we ended up doing is taking subaqueous bottom, which is what you guys oversee, and converting it to tidal areas. And so we actually went out and we surveyed it. You guys still have review over that, but it's actually pulled out as still a VMRC parcel that, you know, it was state-owned bottom at one time. Because we built this stone sill out front, then came in and backfilled it. Or we also did a wetlands behind it, which was not mitigation, that was restoration. And then this is the cap. So you can see we went from subaqueous to intertidal. But what we wanted to do is basically bury some of the contamination and then put this marsh on top of it so that the sand was not moving around. And this was pretty, this is still pretty cutting edge approach, even in the United States today. And I will tell you, I'll show you the results. So a lot of the questions, how well did it work? And I'm going to show you that in a minute. But phase two, we dredged 15,000 cubic yards. So this is what the bottom of our river looks like down at this site. Almost every dredge bucket was sheen coming off of it, and we had a marine clay that, luckily the marine clay prevented it from going deep into the aquifer. This is what we were dredging out. So then we actually offloaded it into barges, mixed it with Portland cement, and it was eventually taken in landfill as material at a controlled landfill. Then we came back in, so we were left with fairly significantly high levels of contamination. You can never dredge out all the contamination. There's no way. You have resuspension and it falls back down, and you leave some in place. So we came back in with clean sand, and we placed the clean sand at different depths depending on the contamination level that was at the site. And what you see in 2011, that's after we were done dredging. We still had we had 10,000. We got it down to 850, but what we ended up doing is placing that clean sand on top of it, and then look in 2012. It all dropped down below 45 parts per million. And that's what we were trying to achieve here, is to also isolate after we removed all this contamination out of the river. You can't get it all. There's no way. So we came up with this cap, and the cap ranged from 2 foot to 6 inches in some places. And that's what was left after the dredging, is that we still had high concentrations, so that's why we added the sand. So, right after we finished, Hess put in a steel cutoff wall that went 40 feet to cut off any ongoing contamination to the river. So we didn't want the uplands to contaminate the offshore project we had just done. So they put in this steel wall. And then on top of the sand, we went in and built a 3-acre oyster reef, which I worked with Jim Wesson on. And so here is the reef that was going in right after construction. So then the monitoring, right? So we spent all this money, did it work? And I feel that we need to show people that this type of work is successful and that money is being well spent. So we had cancer. So Blows Creek, which was our control site, we looked at cancer in the mummy chugs, small bull gudgeons. You probably know that they have a life in their entire life. They spend their entire life in an area the size of this room. So they're good indicators of how healthy the bottom of the river is. So we knew that they had high rates of cancer, pre-cancer. 40% of all the mummy chugs in phase one. If you look at the bottom, you have phase one, which I've talked about, phase two, which I've talked about, and phase three, which I haven't gotten to yet. You can see we had elevated rates of cancer before we did the project. But after we completed the project, boom, we're now the background level. If you look at the control site, we have dropped these concentrations down to background level, which is huge. We've seen a biological response and a decrease in cancer. Full-blown cancer. So this is like the fish are getting ready to die. We have eliminated it from phase one and phase two entirely. In phase three, we've seen a drop. And what we're thinking is that a lot of those fish are moving out of phase three into phase one and two, where there's less contamination and more food for them to consume, and thus dropping their cancer rates. And this was done by Wolfgang Vogelbaum, which I'm sure a lot of you know at BIMS. So Mike Unger and Wolfgang did this as a study, and we've done it for 4 years, and those are the results. We've seen an increase in finfish from this, from four individuals when we did a pre-survey, up to 26 species. Now, I'm not saying it's all due to cancer, right? We've increased complexity and habitat at the site, but we're still seeing increased fish usage, a lot of speckled trout usage, especially younger year fingerlings. We also got black sea bass. Black drum. Thank you. I'm sorry. Black drum down at the site. Lots of spat set down here, and also some significant oyster recruitment without any seeding at this site. So then phase three. So this is the one that will be done, part of the project as with Craney Island eastward expansion. We finished design. You guys have not seen a permit for this. It was actually part of the Virginia Port Authority's permit, so that one, since they're, I believe, a state agency, VMRC doesn't review their permit. However, DEQ did, and also the Corps. This is as part of the design, which is basically dredging 48,000 cubic yards and then putting an engineered cap in on 1.4 acres and then a sand cap on 2.6 acres. And we've done these engineer caps that are basically clay layers to prevent any ongoing contamination coming up in the river. And that's important because this hot spot, this spot where we're putting this engineer cap, is one of the most contaminated sites in Chesapeake Bay. I mean, we have a pool of creosote at this particular site. So, Money Point is a great success story. I hope I convinced you. We removed about 36 million pounds of PAHs, a drop in cancerous lesions, and then we also leverage about $1.5 million in grants to do restoration projects, not mitigation, to accompany the project. But what we're trying to do is move this into a larger arena. And so what we've done is federal requirements for these in-lieu fees required us to come up with, to update our instrument, which is our basically our working agreement with the Corps and DEQ. And so we have submitted a new instrument, which is basically how the trust operates. That instrument has been reviewed by DEQ. We hear we were going to get the green light from them and also the Corps to continue moving on with other sites. And so one of the sites we're looking at is Paradise Creek here, which is also in the southern branch right here. And this site has high PCB, well, elevated, not really high, but PCB concentrations in the first foot to 2 feet. Again, all this is within, you know, is on state-owned bottom. And so what we came up with was, when we first went to the Corps, they said this is way too expensive. It was about $1 million an acre to do this project. So Dave and I worked on trying to make this scalable and affordable. And so what we came up with our engineer is a combination of dredging, which is in yellow, which is about 2 acres, and also the use of this new amendment material, which basically is a small pelletized amendment that you put on the bottom of the river, and the contaminants tend to gravitate towards that amendment, and then the fish can't take it up, or other animals can't take it up. So how it works is like this. So on the bottom of the river, when you have PCBs, it goes from the worms to the fish, then to the birds. So what you end up doing is you ended up putting this small layer of pelletized amendment. They're made out of carbon, and I mean real thin, like this thin on the bottom. And then the worms end up working it in. And what happens is you stop, if you look at the X's here, PCBs are not moving up the food chain. They're locked into the sediments, which is really what we're trying to do here. So here you can see the worms are in red, and then you see the little pellets that are here in the darker color in the sand. So what happens is they move it in there, they move these pellets into the sand area and stops any ongoing contamination to the water column above. And one reason we're really focused on this is because we have a 40-acre nature park that we work with the state of Virginia and other partners to develop, and we have access to the water with a kayak launch at this site, and there's actually active crabbing in Paradise Creek. I will mention at Money Point, you saw that, Carissa, there was active crabbing on top of our remediation area. So our dredger had to have a waterman move off of the site while they were dredging, and they were not very happy. So a lot of these contaminated sites are still have harvest going on in them for crabs, just as a side. So progress with updating this in-lieu fee instrument that I mentioned, the instrument's been reviewed by the agencies, and we've met with Mr. Bull and his staff about this instrument. We're developing a site development plan, which is a fancy term for what we're going to do in Paradise Creek, and the Corps and DEQ and VMRC will be a part of reviewing that plan. Our service area, so I'm not sure if you're familiar, but I'm sure some of you understand that a service area for in-lieu fees are areas that one can take mitigation from. So ours is fairly limited. It's in this HUC code that's shown here. It does go into the Nansemann, but all of our work would be focused on doing mitigation in the Elizabeth River. As a note, we do have we're asking for a few advanced credits for wetlands and oyster mitigation. So it's only like 2 acres of wetlands and 2 acres, I think 2 or 5 acres of oyster. But our focus is really on cleaning up those contaminated sediments. And then we developed this scalable and cost-effective mitigation approach for Paradise Creek, which is what the Corps asked us to do. And that cost is less than a credit for what it costs to mitigate for wetlands. So we were able to get it down. So really, one credit costs about $350,000 for the dredging. And then for the amendment material I mentioned, that's about $350,000 for the amendment. So that in the way it works is an applicant would come to the Corps or maybe VMRC and say, hey, I got to mitigate. Instead of going to a wetland bank or mitigating out of kind for impacts to the bottom, they could pay into the trust. And as soon as they pay in and strike that truck, all of their liability is gone. It is all on the trust. And so one of the things you should keep in mind is that these numbers look high, but these numbers are lower than a credit of wetland mitigation at a wetland bank in the same watershed. Wetland credit is $750,000 for a wetland credit in the Elizabeth River watershed, just as comparison. So with that.
This is pretty much what we wanted to tell you about. Not sure what immediate opportunities you might have. We're really looking at big impacts, large projects that are really impacting the river bottom. The Macrinyon expansion took 580 acres of healthy river bottom. Vanadium terminals dredged 10 million cubic yards that was functioning habitat. We're all about win-win, so we were looking for a way to offset those impacts. The development goes forward, but the river also goes forward with its restoration. So this would ask that you think about it, and as you see some big impacts, you consider that there is a way to mitigate that has been very successful and very meaningful as we work together to clean up and restore the habitat in the Elizabeth River.
So far, total cost?
Total cost. At Money Point, that was so far about a $7 million project that leveraged additional total cost more than $15 million when you count all the voluntary work that the 12 industries did to various stormwater habitat. The city kicked in stormwater improvements as well. At Craney Island expansion, that whole mitigation plan is about $45 million. Hmm. It's not currently funded, not currently. Well, one piece of it has been done. That was actually Paradise Creek Nature Park. I think some oysters have been done. But the Senate part has not been done yet. So those were very expensive, and that's why we tried to come up with an answer for the more affordable, more scalable approach for maybe some other projects.
Marjorie, one of the other remarkable things about the Elizabeth River project is your partnerships. Can you talk to the board a bit about the partnerships that have helped make all this happen?
Sure. We're built on partnerships. Actually, we had a team from Stanford University spend a week with us recently studying how we do it. We have never come upon the effort that we couldn't find a win-win solution to by working with the diverse interests. So, I mentioned 120 Riverstar business and government facilities. It's almost every major facility on the Elizabeth River working collaboratively in partnership from Norfolk Southern to the shipyard, Norfolk Naval Shipyard to the Navy base, to mom and pop companies, little shipyards. And we really believe in bringing everybody to the table and finding how they can help and instead of pointing fingers.
I ask, want to say anything as chair of the talk?
Only thank you so much for support so far and just help us keep cleaning up Elizabeth's bottom.
We had a t-shirt made at one point. We should have brought them today. It's green. It says, "Goo must go on the front." And on the back it says, "Ask me about Elizabeth's bottom." And Mayor Myra Overdorf.
My wife's name is Jane Elizabeth. Please don't spread that around. Don't ask about Elizabeth's bottom.
The other thing we try to do is translate these very difficult technical issues into something the public can understand. And Mayor Virginia Beach used to wear that to the gym and get a lot of interesting questions. So thank you all. It's great to have you up here looking out for the state bottom, and it's just another opportunity to do that.
I got to say here, I've watched your work now for a decade. It's remarkable. It's remarkable about how you do and the successes that you've had and the challenges you've overcome. I think this briefing is really helpful for all of us here who get down into the specifics of individual cases or fisheries or water bottom uses. What's been done here is truly remarkable. And while there's a lot more to go, it's truly, from my perspective here, heartening that it can be done.
Thank you
all for coming in. Appreciate it a lot here and for filling us in.
Thank you. Great work.
Thanks. Keep up the good work, please. We're going to break for lunch at this point, but before we do, I'm going to ask if there's anybody in the audience here who wishes to address the commission on a matter that's not on the agenda. We will return from lunch at 1:30, a few minutes after that, and we will proceed from there with the rest of the meeting. So thank you. We're in recess.